Ladies and gentlemen, it's spoiler in time. This is the show where we take all that hard work we do on our other show, Cord Killers, and apply it to watching things, including television shows, movies. We're going to be spoiling episode 3 of season 5 of Justified, the first 2 episodes of this young new season of The Young Pope. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, what should we start with?
You know, we got to start by checking in on the movie draft.
Just prolonging the inevitable as I wait for Brian to creep up and catch Team DTNS. We're at $686 million, so we're going to come in for a nice soft landing, probably just under $700 million, maybe a little above $700 million. What is Rogue One? I mean, that is where all my money is. Rogue One is at $520 million, so it's probably not going to get too much farther than that, which means that you with $503 million, Brian, are just going to need to make probably $200 million out of your last 3 movies plus any continuing earners, which is absolutely doable. Logan alone could do that.
Well, okay, so a $200 million gap and 3 movies each with the potential to, well, not John Wick. So you got 50 Shades Darker, you got John Wick Chapter 2, and you've got Logan. If I was a betting person, and I am, I would say that I would bet very strongly that between those 3 movies, we're going to get $200 million there.
Plus, Hidden Figures just won Best Ensemble Cast on the SAG Awards, right? So you've got a little bump coming from that movie. It's just still getting a lot of buzz. There's some Oscar buzz around it, too. So that'll throw a few more dollars in your hopper. Sing is not totally done making its money either. It's probably not going to make too much more, but yeah, I mean, this is in the bank for you.
Yeah, I think it is. But what's interesting, the number one Best Buy so far was Hidden Figures. Wow, $104 million, and I got it for $6.
I know.
The number two Best Buy was Sing for $15, and it's made $257 million. Wow, dude. And then,
The number three is Trolls, right?
Yeah, number three is Trolls, yeah. which is your buy. Right.
The story of this is that I had a perfect strategy until other people stopped bidding.
Like, once
getting
I started
Trolls
scooping
in Rogue
up all the
One
bargains.
Should have been, like, with a couple other bargains for rounding up, should have been all I needed. But if you look at the money spent, the tale is told, which is Brian spent $100 and got all the movies, and $50 left on the table between Milango, Christie, and my own, you know, dollar short on Team DTNS.
This is not a story of you failing to act like a winner. In any other season, you would have had a winning slate. $700 million is at the top of what we see in the winter draft. But this is a story of Justin Milango, Christie,
and Mikey.
And I don't
say this as sour grapes. I say it as, like, this is the interesting part of auction, which is I got Rogue One early and was like, great, I just need to, like, throw the rest of my money out there. So I use it, and spending $99 is pretty good. And then I just watched in horror as my strategy was undermined and fell apart as the rest of the bidding played out the way it did.
Yeah. No. And what happened is once you were out, you know, you had no ability to help inflate the price, because there's a defensive strategy. It's like, even if you don't want a thing, you bid it up at least to a number to where, you know, it won't go that cheap. But just everyone kept letting me get stuff ridiculously cheap.
Yeah. Coming out this week, Christie's movie The Comedian and Rings, which is Mikey Newman's movie. Rings might make some money. Comedian Christie only got spent $5 on, so it's not going to be a bad buy for her, but it's not going to make that much either.
What is the movie Rings about?
It's a sequel to The Ring.
That's insane to spend that kind of money on a horror movie. He spent $30, $29.
A February horror movie, mind you, even.
Yeah.
And then 50 Shades Darker comes out not this week, but the week after, along with the Lego Batman movie and John Wick. Lego Batman movie will make some good money for Mikey Newman. It still probably won't be enough. And of course, 50 Shades and John Wick will make decent money as well.
dude, we are 4 weeks away from Logan coming out. And after I've watched that trailer a million times, and I'm so, so excited about it. We had C. Robert Cargill on Night Attack, and he said that he saw the first 40 minutes of Logan at a film festival. I think it was Buttonumathon. He said it was extraordinary. And he said, now he's been fooled before. He thought the first, you know, they did a similar thing with Cowboys versus Aliens, but he was blown away and said it was one of the first acts, the best first acts he's seen of any comic book movie ever of all time.
Wow.
And
so big words. All right, let's move on. Spoiler in time. I mean, the whole show is spoiler in time, but let's start spoilering The Young Pope, which I had been interested in seeing. This is one of those examples where I wanted to see a movie. Or not a movie, but a television show. I was very interested in the premise of the television show, which is like, oh, what happens when a young American becomes Pope? I thought I probably knew what was happening, but I'm so fascinated with the sort of behind the scenes conspiracy theory, Umberto Eco, Dan Brown type of story that I wanted to see what kind of story they were going to tell. But it just wasn't a priority enough until Brian started raving about it. And then last night or yesterday, I finally got the time to start watching, and I actually just wanted to watch the first few minutes to get the flavor before I went and did something else. 13 minutes later, I had to stop because I had to do something else. And as soon as I could, I went back and finished it and went ahead and watched a second episode, which I hadn't been planning to do. I just made sure I found the time for it. I'm definitely hooked.
Yeah, it's really good for what it does. And interestingly, I was pretty interested that Andrew didn't seem to really care for it. I loved it because, you know, the political machinations and the stories you hear about, you know, politics being played, you know, at the Vatican, and to have, you know, suddenly Frank Underwood placed in that world, a total wild card. And it's fun. First of all, like, I know what they're doing. They're figuring out excuses to put big visuals and spend big money on, you know, cinematography and stuff. They start off with a dream sequence so that they can surprise you and undermine you and let you know that it won't be business as usual. They immediately subvert everything. But what a smart way to get you fully engaged right at the beginning and have you asking questions like, who is this guy? What's his story? You know, what does he really want? And of course, that's the conceit of the whole show, is that as the show goes on, it becomes increasingly clear what every single chess piece does. Like, this one wants this. This one is good at that. And just the wild card the entire time, you know, four episodes in, I haven't watched episode five yet, but four or five episodes in, I still don't know. And I'm still super engaged and super sucked in.
Yeah. The first episode, they certainly lead you to believe he's one kind of person, right? Especially with that opening dream sequence. By the second episode, you realize, oh, that opening dream sequence wasn't a dream. That was a nightmare. That is him terrifying himself that he would actually say these things based on the speech he gives in the second episode. It's like, oh, that's what he really wants to say, which is also terrifying in a whole different way. But mostly what I liked about it is the first episode, I thought I was going to get a more traditional, he'll want to change things, but he'll be thwarted at every move, and you'll have to root for him to figure right out how to, you know, use his American wiles against this ossified system. And instead, he just comes in with a machete and says, I'm just not going to play your game at all, pretty much. You made me Pope thinking you could manipulate me, and guess what? You can't. So I'm going to bring in Sister Mary from outside and just cut the rest of you out, except when I absolutely have to need you, which is the part that I think is genius, which is he's not unrealistic. He knows that he does need the Secretary of State, and so he only cuts as far as he thinks he can get away with and still keep the function and still keep the appetite of the Secretary of State after him. So I think he's going to be, you know, a John the 23rd. He's going to be a liberal revolutionary. And then in the second episode, they're like, hey, no, we kind of led you to think he was American. He's very conservative. We might have dropped a couple of hints of that. We really meant it. And he outs a homosexual Pope. He gives that fire and brimstone speech at the end. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is not where I was expecting to go with this at all. And as we were talking about on the phone yesterday, there's also his confession in episode one where he admits to not believing in God. And then you can tell he kind of covers it up, which makes you think that that opening dream sequence is about him and his secret beliefs. And then by the end of the second episode, you're like, well, wait a minute. Is he angry with himself because he doubts God, or does he really not believe in God? And is, and they're sort of leading you to believe at that point, he's angry about things that have happened in his past and he's taking it out in the world.
Yeah. The, I suspect that his true intentions and his true opinion will never be revealed to us as viewers. I feel like that's Darth Vader's face and we never get to see it. And that's one of the conceits that we'll have to adjust to. But I'll tell you what, in a world where, you know, you and I have watched a few shows, Tom, and we've seen a few HBO shows and we feel like, you know, there's certain storytelling elements. It's a rare and precious thing to be truly surprised. And I was truly surprised by that speech he gave, right down to that moment where he's, you know, it's like, okay, he opens up the speech and it's just that letter. And you're like, okay, he's not going to give that. He's going to speak from the heart and give something surprising, something more liberal than you would expect. And it's like, nope. And that moment that he just loses his crap at the dude shooting a laser pointer at him and stuff, you know, how dare you shine a light at your Pope, which I thought that was a great moment where it's just like he didn't say, get that laser out of my face. He said, how dare you shine a light on your Pope? And it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like old world medieval, you know, this dude's leading a country of 1 billion people. And yep. I think that's the other thing that's so engaging about it is this series is playing with electricity. It's playing with wildfire because this ain't no joke. Like, you know, I asked Father Robert Balasar of the Jesuits, you know, I was like, hey, what'd you think? And I asked him in public. And so I got a careful, measured answer that was coy, where he said not enough car chases. But then he mentioned that they got an advanced screening. And then he said the Pope was not amused or whatever. And he showed a very stoic faced picture of the Pope just that he grabbed online. But the fact that this is a real place and this has the potential to actually offend people, and that there are people I know who will not watch it because it's uncomfortable for them. Like I don't like the fact that this is playing in dangerous waters for me, this is what the person said, you know, basically, this is too personal, too real. I don't trust it to play nice, which I think is the nicest thing you could say about it. Literally anything's on the table.
Either the thing is, it's not necessarily talking about your Catholic Church, but it's talking about a Catholic Church that could exist. So there's a way to look at it, I think. And as someone who is raised Catholic, I'm speaking from my own experience. There's a way to look at it as this is science fiction. This is when, you know, this is the Manchurian Candidate, right? This is the Manchurian Candidate didn't undermine my belief in the United States. It raised my awareness of, you know, the things we need to guard against. And you could see it. You could see the young Pope this way as well. It's like, oh, this is important to note. This isn't describing what actually happens. This is raising the specter of like, ah, these are the evils and sins we need to guard against. On the other hand, if you're someone who worries that this is close to the truth and you look at it and say, oh no, you're trying to tell me this could happen and that it's too close to happen. And that makes me uncomfortable. I could totally see that. And I think that's the brilliance of it is that it plays that line very well.
Well, and here is the magic trick that it does amazingly well. And it gets me every time. On the fourth episode I was watching, and Bonnie, you know, was stopped because they do the one play that they do better than I think, I don't want to say any show, but one of the best of this trick I've ever seen is the ability to set up a situation where you don't know what he's going to say. And then the moment he opens his mouth, it is electrically awkward. And you're just hanging there and you're sitting there twisting at the discomfort. And meanwhile, with that slightly upturned, slightly smug, you know, slightly squinty eyed, beatific, superior posture, he just lets you, the audience, twist in the awkwardness of what he's handling. And they do it over and over and over again, and it never gets old.
Yeah, if anything gets old, so far they do seem to love their effects and their framing shots. They're very much in love with themselves on that, and some of them are great. There was one with a hand sort of holding something, just the way they had framed it, two pieces of art. That might get tiresome after a while. I'm not sure, but man, that trick that you're talking about, where he's the American who just says something rather than follow the polite forms.
The dance, the talking around it, and one might imply, and His Eminence may consider, and all that stuff, and he's direct, and you know, the dressing down, like that opening shot when he dresses down the maid, you know, explaining like, no, she's friendly. Here's the problem with being friendly is that, you know, it blurs lines and it makes it difficult. I prefer a professional thing. And it's not that he says anything overtly hostile or awful, but like, you know, you understand why she's crying by the time she walks away.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I realized is at the end of watching two episodes, you still have not seen the title sequence opening. They don't show it until the third episode.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, no, I noticed that the first episode had sort of a long credit sequence that was just over the beginnings of a scene, essentially. So, yeah, I didn't realize I hadn't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to that.
Bryce is chiming in. You don't like the title sequence?
I don't like it. I rather enjoyed how they had the credits in the scenes as in those first few episodes. Mm-hmm. Of a show that feels kind of in a very specific place, the title sequence and all the green screening and animated paintings and stuff feel just a little too fake.
Hey, don't spoil it for me.
A little gaudy.
Yeah. It felt out of place for everything, even though I like the music choice first few times that they do it. So I don't know. Maybe it'll grow on me.
Yeah. What's funny is it reverse grew on me. I loved it when I first saw it. I was like, oh, the title sequence is awesome. And then the second time I watched it, I'm like, this is kind of silly. It's a little silly. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
And it's kind of slow.
That I didn't worry about.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Justified then?
Yes, we shall. So Justified Season 5, Episode 3, we are starting to see, not wasting a lot of time, not a Drew Thomas Thompson season this time. They're actually getting to the point. I am fully invested in the Dewey Crow story. I like the fact that, you know, his cousin came in and is a bully. And then this is the first episode where you see him providing, you see him being a bully, and then you see him flipping around and providing value to the operation and explaining, you know, and like, look, you're going to make real money here. Let me provide value so that you cut me in. Also, you don't have a choice. You're cutting me in because I'm going to run this thing.
Yeah. And that's just the Dewey Crow. That's just that part of the Dewey Crow story. There's also the part where Dewey goes to Boyd.
Yeah. Oh, and Boyd, you know, is a, and like, then a, like a Boyd pro life coach
being plugged in to Raylan on one side, but also Ava on another story. And then the whole thing with Wynn Duffy and getting robbed and trying to figure out who robbed him. It's such a complex, this is probably one of the most complex episodes of Justified yet.
This is the deepest in the nested storylines I think we've gotten to, where it's almost difficult for us to, we are now at the point where we can't even talk about the episode without assuming you're familiar with all these characters and the backstory and the stuff leading up to it. It is now, we're at that complex Gordian knot phase of things. So let's just go with characters. Wynn Duffy was great. The BB gun torture scene was great. Him being cool as a cucumber when Raylan shows up and mentioned someone's trying to kill him was great. What do you think of Raylan's, like, you know, moth to the flame thing with that social worker chick? Is that doing anything for you?
You know, like I said, when she first came on the scene, and I was like, that just didn't seem believable that he would immediately, like, let me just hit on the social worker and I'll bring her back to the drug seized property. I didn't buy how he got into it, but I will buy that he could have gotten into it, right, in some way. And so from then on, it's like, oh, well, she is certainly, he has a type, right? And she, you know, sure looks like Ava Crowder, or, you know, from a little bit far away. So I would believe that he would be attracted to her. I would believe that he would go in eyes wide open, knowing maybe she is hoodwinking me, but I can take care of myself. It's worth it. The whole thing, that whole subplot with the guy who at first you think he's sent by Boyd or Wynn, and then, or I'm sorry, not by Boyd or Wynn, but you think he's sent by the guy whose property was seized. Then you think, oh, well, he's not sent by the guy whose property was seized. He must be her ex-boyfriend. And then you find out, no, he's not her ex-boyfriend. That was like two episodes worth of plot that they just ran at you, which was great.
Wait, when did we find out that he wasn't her ex-boyfriend? He was like her ex-husband, right?
He was just a person that she was the social worker who took his kid away.
Oh, I got it. But she planted drugs on him. Why? Like to what benefit? I thought they were.
She
wanted the kid.
This is how complex this episode is. He said she planted meth so that she could then seize the child and take him away because he didn't think the child was in a good home. And I lost my kid because she planted meth on me. She said she didn't do it, but that the kid was in a bad way. So maybe that's her saying like, well, I can't admit I did it, but it was worth it because that kid was in a really bad situation.
But they had to have some relationship
Then there's the implication that, you know, our agent friend says is like, well, maybe she's playing you. Maybe she actually works with that guy. And then at the end, he says, how do I know that you weren't playing me? And she's like, well, I guess you never will.
Yeah. So this is the one part of this the subplot that I don't follow is it's hard for me to believe that that Raylan would engage with this kind of person. Well, I don't know. I guess he hooked up with Ava Crowder. But that was kind of a simpler thing. Maybe I do believe he'd do it just to chase tail. I guess I don't believe how he did it, but I
would believe that he could, right? Given the right circumstances.
Yeah, I would hope by now, like, I guess if he wants to continue to pursue this, I would like to think it's out of professional investigation motivation. And I wish they would tell that to us. But for right now, it just seems like, I don't know, she's got a cute butt, and I guess I'm going to play with fire. But then again, that's kind of what he does. So
that is kind of what he does, yeah.
It's tough because I don't feel as invested because it seems like such a patently bad idea to get mixed up with her just because she's attractive.
Yeah, I would like to be sold on that a little better. Like, again, in abstract, I can believe it, right? He got mixed up with the bartender above because she was just good looking. And then it turned out that she was pulling something on him. And so this is more believable in some ways because she's a respectable social worker and that's an admirable profession. And there might be something there where he's like, oh, this is someone who could, you know, who cares about children. And that's a better thing than just, you know, somebody who's got a temporary job or whatever. But then why he sticks with it after all of this is another question. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, still not a fan of them living in the house. That's just and then getting the roommate situation where it's like, oh, you two are an odd couple. That all feels a little bit contrived.
I want to see that sitcom though, actually.
But how about that scene with Boyd and the Russian chick where you know, this let me see your tattoos thing, and it is very, very sexually charged. And you feel like, you know, and you could tell, you know, Boyd's maybe, you know, not the biggest fan of sitting outside the prison while, you know, trying to get Ava off and having Ava be frustrated and not really
nagging every time he goes to visit her. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, you know, you sort of feel like, oh, he would not mind a dalliance here. And then that moment that after that charged moment, she's like, yeah, that tattoo will do fine. Let's get a hand, you know, and then it's. You know, that kind of look away. And I you know, obviously we're going to see that intoxicating relationship go somewhere. Yeah.
That was a ballet of shooting for PG, you know, for PG-13 television too.
Oh, I was, yeah.
Yeah. That was one very clever framing.
That has to be intentional because it looked like she was grabbing his hand and putting it right on her crotch from the shot. And then they cut to the other angle, and clearly it's like, you know, 8 to 10 inches away. Yeah. But it did not look like that from that shot. It looked like they were telling a very different story.
Definitely. And then I guess Boyd tracking down the woman who had told someone who had paid her, and she never met him. She was just on the phone. And so we've now we've got another player for him to try to go after, which is who was it that stole his shipment?
Yeah. And we also have the dude he beat up, woke up and is just like, yeah, I want Boyd Crowder killed.
Oh, right. And almost forgot about that whole subplot, which is
kind of like the major plot,
which is the whole reason for the hand, right? Which is let's fake your death. That's not going to last very long, but at least it'll buy us some time. Mm-hmm. And everybody needs $300,000. So who's going to get it?
Exactly. Nope. Definitely enjoying it. Definitely invested. Man, is it getting complex now?
Yeah.
We're finally at the point where I'm feeling a payoff to the promise literally everyone who told us to watch this show made.
Yeah, definitely. This was one of my favorite episodes. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, everybody, for watching this show. And we will be back to spoil more Justified, probably more Young Pope. And The Expanse is coming back, too. So we'll spoil you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.